Good morning. Hey. So for quite some time now, Ryan has intermittently joked with me about what are you going to talk about on Sunday? I don't have anything prepared, and kind of jokes with me about when I'll take my turn to sit up here for more than just open mic, which you know I love. And so finally, I agreed, but the condition was that I had to wait for the Ball State semester to be over so that I could focus on preparing. So here I am to talk to you about motherhood, which is probably the topic in life that I am most passionate about. As you know, I love my job. I'm very passionate about my job, that it gives me an actual paycheck. I'm very invested in that, but it is not nearly as important to me as the job of raising Isaac and Harrison. So here I am. I think Ryan is trying to get my notes ready, so we're going to stall. There we go. Okay, so just a few little introductory pictures. This is my world right here. In the little video, Isaac said something, by the way, I didn't know about that video, so that was really cool. Isaac said something about that we go on lots of adventures, and that is something that's really important to me as a mom. I'm thankful that I have a job that pays me enough money that my kids have the things that they need in life. But what I'm even more thankful for and is really important to me is that my kids have experiences in life, because they're not going to remember in 20 or 30 years the stuff that I bought them. They're going to remember the stuff that we did together. So these are just some of our adventures. We went to the Bean in Chicago, and the one on the bottom left is when we went to California. The one in the middle is Disney World. We went camping. And then if you have never been to the City Museum in St. Louis, this is my plug. You should go there. It's really awesome. So those are just some of our adventures. So as I was preparing that I would be speaking today, I'm a teacher by trade, and anytime you write a paper or you give a talk or a presentation, you have to have a title. You have to have a theme. So I really struggled with what my title was going to be. So here are some examples of the titles that I thought of. The Only Unconditional Love. I hate to say, romantic love is not unconditional. Romantic love is conditional on the other person loving and treating you kindly. The love of a child, in my eyes, is the only unconditional love. Or sacrificing for your child versus sacrificing your child. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And a story that goes with that. Or the mother of all mothers, who, of course, is Mary. So I decided none of those were going to work. At the end, I'll tell you what the title really turned out to be. So if we could go ahead. So when I decided to prepare for speaking today, I needed to do a little research. And so in my Bible, I was fortunate enough to have a nice little reference section at the front where I could look up topics and see where they are. And when I looked up motherhood, and I found motherhood, and the subheading was described as the object of prayer, painful yet joyful. Now, here's what I appreciate about this, that painful and joyful are not anywhere close to each other in the Bible. The people who put together this little reference section put in that little connector of yet joyful. They slid that in there of there's a little hope. And sometimes dangerous. So here's my example of the danger of being a mother. This is another adventure that we went on. We went to Nashville a couple of years ago with Joe and his two kids, and we went to this really cool treetop adventure park, and this was the most challenging, most terrifying 2 hours of my life. And you're harnessed in, double harnessed just in case one breaks, and you have to go across all of these adventures that are progressively higher off of the ground. There are four courses that get progressively harder and higher, and it was a little bit of a challenge, but I was really proud of myself for getting through it, and it was very dangerous, and also not only terrifying for myself to be, you know, strung up at the top of a tree and working my way across these obstacles, but a little terrifying to be trying to get yourself across, and then, you know, 50 feet away is your kid who is trying to get himself across some other obstacle, and you're hoping that his harnesses also hold up because there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it if they don't. So let's take a second and see what we described as motherhood is. So if I can have a volunteer to just read a few off of this sheet, what did we say motherhood is?
Motherhood is the best. Johnny said basically awesomeness from your God. Loving your child no matter what, an awesome privilege, more important than we can imagine.
How about two more?
Okay. A never ending job, but a priceless dream, and get better wage.
Awesome. Okay. So then next, while I was preparing for what I was going to talk to you about motherhood, I found in my reference section the duties of a mother. So let's see what we said the duties are, and I believe it's the middle one. So if I can have a volunteer who will read some duties of motherhood.
John started off with, you said duties. Kids craziness, establishing a definition of normal for their children, making sure your child understands the root of the problem, be the cheerleader, fixing breakfast.
Okay, so here are the things that the Bible says are the duties of a mother: hospitality, nourishment, provision, comfort, teaching, and here's my favorite, selecting your son's wife. Somebody just in mind for you. So I don't anymore, you know, see my duty as selecting wives for my sons. I believe they'll do a great job of selecting their own life partners. But I do see my job, very similarly to this, as preparing them to be good husbands. And I had an epiphany moment several years ago when my life was very different than it is currently, of realizing I wasn't just raising boys, I was raising young men, and that my job was to make sure that they turned out to be respectable young men, and that my relationships, my romantic relationships, were the primary example they were going to see in their lives and they were going to mimic. And as an adult later in life, would I be proud of the husbands that my children would become? My former mother-in-law apologized to me once, and that was an eye-opening moment for me to realize I didn't ever want to have to apologize to my daughter-in-law for what my sons had become, and that became a very important job to me. They're going to leave me someday. They're going to move out sooner than I really want to acknowledge, and when they do, they're going to be prepared for adulthood, and they're going to be prepared to be an awesome mate for someone, and that the way that they see me treated is what they're going to mimic in how they treat a woman. That's a lot of pressure for Joe, but he's doing a great job and teaching them the right way to treat someone. So here's my example of how I make sure that my kids are going to be great husbands someday. Okay, so let's go on. I found that Jesus described motherhood. I didn't find any other comparison that Jesus made of the pain of his crucifixion and resurrection. This is the only comparison I found. This is when he's talking to his disciples, and he's telling them, this is in John chapter 16, in just a little while, I'll be gone, and you won't see me anymore. Then, just a little while after that, you'll see me again. Truly, you will weep and mourn over what is going to happen to me, but the world will rejoice You will grieve, but your grief will suddenly turn to wonderful joy when you see me again. And you can imagine how confusing this is. Like, okay, we're going to be sad, but we're going to be happy. Okay, so keep going. And he says, it will be like a woman experiencing, oh, I hate when I see my own typos. It will be like a woman experiencing the pains of labor. When her child is born, her anguish gives place to joy because she has brought a new person into the world. So think about this. This is that unconditional love. Is there any other human that could cause you the physical pain of childbirth, and then you would immediately be happy to see them afterwards? This is the only example in humanity where you would experience such incredible pain and then joy right afterwards. So we have a picture, and my grandfather happens to be just kind of in this one. So this is Harrison when he was just a tiny little baby. Okay, so now we're going to get into our three stories. Our first one is unconditional love. So let me give you a little bit of background. So you're familiar with Sarah and Abraham. I'm sure that you have heard of Sarah and Abraham. They were very old and they didn't have any children. And so Sarah felt bad that Abraham didn't have any descendants. And she said, here is my maidservant. Go have a child with my maidservant. At least then you will have descendants. And so her maidservant was Hannah. And so he does. He and Hannah are going to have a baby, and God tells Hannah, this son of yours will be a wild one, free and untamed as a wild donkey. He will be against everyone, and everyone will be against him. Yes, he will live at odds with the rest of his brothers. So imagine you're pregnant, and God comes to you in this vision and tells you, this is what your kid is going to be like. And imagine trying to be excited about that and about this child. But yet, of course, Hannah was still excited about Ishmael and about who he would become because she loved him and he was her child and she loved him unconditionally. And so let's have a volunteer read some examples of some times in life that it is challenging to love your child.
Don't listen when they're awake. When they try to headbutt into your belly, work on, and mess you up. Okay. She's in a bad mood. I love her since the moment she was born. They dye their hair.
That came from my kid. Remember that streak? It's great. So this really was relatable to me. I love those boys more than anything in this world, but there are sometimes it's hard, and they know it. And I loved the video at the very beginning about I'm a mom. I'm a mom who has lost my cool. I'm a mom who has had to apologize. I'm a mom who's been in a bad mood and taken it out on my kids. And I hate those moments, and I feel guilty for those moments. And sometimes they're the cause of those moments, but sometimes not. I like the Time Hop app that tells me, you know, what I posted on social media on this day in history. And so my Time Hop this morning was, what part of find something calm to do that won't make me mad is so hard to understand? So if you could show the pictures. So this is the boys, and these pictures tell a little bit about each of their personalities. And I'm going to start with Harrison. So Harrison, okay, it's a cute picture. What? He's holding some Play-Doh. So what? Let me tell you when this picture was taken. This is Isaac's birthday, and that's Isaac's birthday present. This is Harrison. We have said for many years that Harrison has a Napoleon complex. He's small but mighty. He's not taken anything from anyone, and he's a little bit stubborn, and my parents will tell you exactly where he got that. So let me tell you how challenging it is sometimes to see some of your own character traits in your child that frustrate you and think, karma. And this is Isaac. And Isaac was the kid that people would lovingly say, oh, he's all boy, isn't he? And what they really meant was, you can't get control of that kid, can you? And they were kind of right. And you'd never know it. Isaac is this chill, mellow teenager. He's this respectable young man. I marvel every day at how mature he's becoming and how wise he is. He was a handful, and it was hard. I didn't know what to do. And in kindergarten, I had, so at my school, we used to offer a half day and a full day option. And within the same classroom, you could have some kids who were half day and were going to go home at lunchtime, and some kids who were full day and were going to stay all day. And a few weeks into the school year, his teacher came to me and said, I think we might want to try half days. Because he couldn't be good all day. And it was really hard. And I was the principal. And so here, you know, the teacher is coming to me with her principal's kid in her class and saying, this is not working. Isaac's doctor told me that it was my fault that he was misbehaving in school because he has an August birthday. So he has that magical birthday where you have to decide as a parent, is he going to be the oldest in the class or the youngest? And I opted for youngest because he's so smart. I didn't want to hold him out for another year. So when we talked to his doctor about the difficulties he was having in class, his doctor told me it was my fault because I had let him be the youngest in the class. And if I had just waited a year to put him in kindergarten, this wouldn't have happened. I had a parent who was at school, another mom that also had children in the school, and her child was in the same grade as Isaac, and he took medication for ADHD, and I was really hesitant about that. I really didn't want to go down that path. And she told me that not giving him medication for ADHD was like denying him medication for a heart condition. I don't agree with that, but think about how that makes you feel as a parent that, wait a minute, this is my kid, and I love this kid, even though he's wild and crazy, and I don't think I should have to medicate him. Eventually, we did, and it really helped, but it's hard sometimes. But there was hope for Hannah, because later, Sarah became jealous. And Sarah told Abraham to send Hannah and Ishmael away into the wilderness. And Hannah was afraid. She was worried that Ishmael was going to die out in the wilderness. And God said to her, I will make a great name for his descendants. He's going to live forever. He's going to have descendants. He's going to be famous. And it says a couple verses later, he became an expert archer, and his mother arranged a marriage for him and a young woman from Egypt. So it all turned out okay. He grew into this expert archer. He married this beautiful Egyptian woman. He had many descendants. Life was good. So next, we're going to talk about sacrificing for your child versus sacrificing your child. So this is the story of Sarah and Isaac. So this is the same Sarah. So after she's already told her husband Abraham to go have a child with Hannah, then God comes to her and tells her that she's going to have a baby. And she's roughly 100 years old at this point. And she names her baby Isaac. And Isaac means laughter because she thought, yeah, right. And she did. She had a baby and named him Isaac. And we're all familiar with the story where God tells Abraham, take your son, your only son, yes, Isaac, whom you love so much. I found that interesting because he does have another son, Ishmael, but not with Sarah. And go to the land of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I will point out to you. Now, we know that the way the story turns out is that Abraham agrees and he takes Isaac on this journey and they're headed up the mountains and Isaac's like, so dad, where's the ram that we're going to sacrifice? And Abraham's like, well, son, you see, the thing is. And so they get to the top of the mountain and Abraham is ready to strike Isaac and sacrifice him. And God says, wait. It's okay. You've proven that you were willing to do it. You've proven your faith. You don't have to do it. And so he comes back and he brings Isaac back with him. What we don't know in this story, what they don't tell us in Genesis is, did Sarah know what was about to go down? So So imagine that you are Sarah. You are 100 years old and you have just had your first child. And he's old enough, we don't know how old he is, but he's old enough to walk and go with his dad and talk and everything. And it's after dinner and Isaac has gone to bed on his straw pad. And Abraham says, Isaac and I are going to go on a journey and we're going to make a sacrifice. Oh, honey, that's great. I'll pack your satchel. I'll pack a sheep's bladder full of water for you for the journey. And he says, no, you don't understand. I'm going to sacrifice Isaac. Imagine as a parent, the response to that. And would you let him? Would you agree to that? Hug your child goodbye in the morning and know that that was it? Or the flip, maybe Sarah didn't know, and she sends them off on this journey having no idea what the plan was, and they get back, and Abraham says, whew, what a relief. I almost didn't bring your kid back. How would you respond to that? Now, thankfully, we don't have to do that. We don't make burnt offerings of any sort anymore. But in what way might you sacrifice your child? What if your kid comes to you and says, I'm going to be a missionary. I'm moving to Ethiopia. Or says, I'm going to go witness to gang members in LA. How's that sound, Mom? Would you like to come visit on Mother's Day? Sometimes you might have to sacrifice your child to do God's work that's scary for you as a parent. But sometimes you might just have to sacrifice for your child instead. So here's my example of sacrificing for my child. This is the Indianapolis Zoo, and there is an enclosure where you can feed the birds. Isaac really wanted to feed the birds, and I am terrified of birds. So this is in the bird enclosure, and here they are flying all around my head. Thankfully, after this experience, Isaac was big enough to go in that enclosure alone, and I stood on the other side of that fence and waved. I didn't do that again. So that was a small sacrifice that I made, going in and letting the birds fly at my head. And I'll tell you, I don't know what they say to each other, but they all at once, they're on this side of the enclosure, and then one of them says, hey, let's go over there, and let's stay really low while we do it. And they all come rushing at you at once. I'm never doing that again. But let's talk about what some of the real sacrifices are that mothers make, if I can have a volunteer to read from that very back one. Okay. So our next story is the mother of all mothers, who of course is Mary. And you know, everybody knows about Mary in Christianity. Of course, she's the mother of Jesus. And what we think of, or at least what I think of when I think of Mary, is the story of Jesus' birth, Christmas, right? Okay, so Mary is engaged to Joseph, and God tells Mary, you're going to have a baby. And she's like, hold on a minute, I'm not married yet, and I don't know how that's going to happen. And he says, no, it's all right, you're going to have a baby. By the way, your cousin Elizabeth is also going to have a baby. Elizabeth was older and had been barren. And so Mary goes to visit Elizabeth, and sure enough, Elizabeth's pregnant. And okay, well, I guess this is happening. We're both having babies. But that's really about all that we know that Mary knows about this gig. She knows that she's going to have a baby, and she's not really sure how that happened. But in all of my research, I couldn't find anywhere where God told Mary that Jesus was the Son of God, or that God told Mary that Jesus was going to go away and minister to others and wasn't going to spend his life being raised with her, or that he told Mary that Jesus was going to be sacrificed and then later risen from the dead. So we don't know if Mary knew any of this. All that Mary knew was, I'm going to have this baby and I don't know how it happened. And that's it. That's there's not a lot about Mary in the Gospels, and that really surprised me. So when Jesus was a baby and it was time, they took him to Simeon in order to be blessed. And Simeon was so excited to see this baby. And so he takes the child in his arms and he praises God and he says, "Lord, now I can die in peace. As you promised me, I have seen the Savior you have given to all people. He is a light to reveal God to the nations, and he is the glory of your people Israel." Okay, so you have this new baby, but you don't really know how you got it. And you take him to the priest to be blessed, and the priest says this. And you're like, "What? Oh, okay." So then it says Joseph and Mary were amazed at what was being said about Jesus. Then Simeon blessed them, and he said to Mary, "This child will be rejected by many in Israel, and it will be their undoing. But he will be the greatest joy to many others. Thus the deepest thoughts of many hearts will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your very soul." Okay, so like a year ago, God comes to me and tells me I'm going to have a baby, and I don't really know how that's going to happen. And now this priest is saying all this weird stuff about he's so excited to see this baby, and he's telling me that he's going to be rejected and that my soul is going to be pierced. Okay, what's happening here? So Mary's confused about what's going on with Jesus. Like, what's happening with this baby? So we fast forward. We don't hear a whole lot about Jesus until several years later, and we probably are most familiar with this story where Mary and Joseph take Jesus, and they're visiting in another city, and it's time to go, and they go. Everybody's walking on the road and heading back, and Mary and Joseph are just assuming that Jesus is with somebody else. That happened to me once. We lost Isaac. Their dad and I had taken them to an aquarium at Newport, and I've got Harrison in the stroller, and I assume that Isaac is with your dad over there, and I look, and I see their dad, and I don't see Isaac, and I'm kind of motioning like, "Where is he?" And he's like, "Oh." And so we figure out that we each thought Isaac was with the other one, and Isaac had decided to go back to the shark petting area. And so he was, you know, hundreds of feet away petting some sharks. And so we had lost him. So this happened to Mary and Joseph. They lost Jesus. And so they go back to go find him, and they find him, and he's in the temple. And they said, "Son," his mother said to him, "why have you done this to us? Your father and I have been frantic searching for you everywhere." And he says, "But why did you need to search?" he asked. "You should have known that I would be in my father's house." But they didn't understand what he meant. So I think Jesus is like 12 in this story. And so again, and you know how it is to kind of not really understand your 12-year-old. And so Mary and Joseph are like, "He's in his father's house. Like, he's his father. And what do you mean I should have known where you are? What, you were supposed to be with us." So Mary's confusion continues over, like, who is this kid? So then we don't hear much about Mary again for quite some time. And I found this interesting. I only found this story in Luke. I couldn't find it in any other gospel. And this is the whole story. There's nothing else. It says, once when Jesus' mother and brothers came to see him, they couldn't get to him because of the crowds. Someone told Jesus, "Your mother and your brothers are outside and they want to see you." So imagine, so Jesus has gone off and he's doing his thing and he's ministering and he's healing and he's collecting disciples and he's, you know, turning water into wine. And, "Oh, we've caught up to him. Let's go see him." And there's this crowd and we can't get in. And we're like, "Hey, go tell him that his mom is out here and wants to see him." And so somebody goes in and is like, "Hey, your mom and your brother, they're here. Go see him." And instead of coming outside and like, "Mom, it's been years. It's so great to see you. How's dad?" Jesus says, "My mother and my brothers are all those who hear the message of God and obey it." He doesn't acknowledge her. That's it. That's the whole story. He's done. There's no like happy ending. There's no, and then he went out and they rejoiced and had dinner together and caught up after many years. No, that's it. He's like, "Meh, I'm good. These are my mother and my brothers. So imagine being Mary and being just totally befuddled. Like, who is this kid? So as a parent, maybe you have at one time felt like, who is this kid? I promise you, my parents felt that way right around the time I was 13. I was not a happy person to be around. I was not pleasant at all. Sorry. And I have felt that way as well. You all witnessed Isaac going through his, like, who is this kid phase, okay? And so here are some pictures. We got professional photos taken of all of us together, and it, you know, here are some lovely photos of us all happy to be together, and oh, we're being silly against this fence, and you notice Isaac didn't smile at all. I paid a lot of money for a lot of pictures, and my kid is not smiling in one of them. And this went on for like 6 months. Isaac didn't smile. And you're like, what? What is going on? Who is this kid? What? I could not crack the code. And finally, Isaac got over whatever his, you know, adolescent moodiness was, and he smiles again, and he's a pleasant person. But we went through this phase of like, oh my goodness, who is this kid? So there's hope. There's light at the end of the tunnel. And hopefully my parents would tell you that I also turned into a decent human being again right about the time that I got to high school. So there are three stories. We have Hannah, we have Sarah, and we have Mary. So we have our three potential titles. We have the unconditional love of Hannah, who loved her child even though she was told that he was going to be wild and free like an untamed donkey, and she loved him anyway and had hope for him. And we have Sarah, who was ready to make sacrifices for her child, but then maybe was going to have to sacrifice her child. Thankfully, she didn't. And then, of course, we have Mary, the mother of all mothers. But again, like I said, I'm a teacher by trade, and you have to have a theme. It has to connect, and those don't connect. There's no theme. So here's what I decided on for my title instead. This is what I want, and this is what the Bible, what these biblical stories told us. We want our children to live by faith, be known for love, and be a voice of hope. So Sarah had to live by faith that it's going to be okay to give up this child, and it's going to be all right. God told Abraham to sacrifice him, and it turned out okay. And of course, Mary's child was known for love. He's the ultimate of demonstrating love for us. And Hannah had to be a voice of hope when everybody is saying, oh my goodness, what is wrong with this kid? That she had to be able to say, just wait. He's going to be a great, he's going to make great and many descendants. It's okay. He's this wonderful archer. It's okay. He's going to marry this beautiful woman, and they're going to have many, many children and descendants. So this is what I want for my kids. I don't care what they are when they grow up. I don't care how much money they make. All I want is for them to live by faith, be known for love, and be a voice of hope. And these are some examples of them showing love. And some of these are from dialogue and some aren't. So there's Harrison. He loves the babies. You know, as soon as the service is over, Harrison disappears. He's in the baby room. He loves them. There's Isaac with his dyed hair hanging out. I'm pretty sure that's Elijah that he's playing with. There's the two of them hugging. That doesn't happen too often anymore. The little round-faced guy right there, that's Johnny that Isaac is smiling at. And that's Harrison withholding affection from my sister. And then the two of them together. This is when Isaac went to scout camp for the first time, and I was absolutely blown away by how much that kid matured in 3 days. We went to go see him on family night, which is halfway through the week, and my kid had changed from Sunday to Wednesday. And so this is him showing Harrison around the camp, and one of those rare moments where he was a nice brother. So that doesn't happen a lot. So that's my wish for my children. That's what I think those three mothers, their wish was for their children, and probably, I hope, what your wish is for your children. So, thank you.